Welcome back to the Sweat Elite podcast, or welcome to if it's the first time you're tuning in. This is Matt, the founder at Sweat Elite, and this is another episode of Hang Wiz, where I hang out with a professional athlete for around about an hour, give or take maybe 10 or 15 minutes, to speak all about their training, lifestyle, in the hope that we can extract some information that you and I, the listeners, can learn from. In this particular case, I speak with 219 marathoner Betsy Sainer. Now, very recently 219 marathoner, because Betsy Sainer improved on her personal best of 2:21 over the marathon to run 2:19:17 at the Tokyo Marathon just last weekend. But this conversation was a fascinating one to me. I know I'm fascinated by athletes' information all the time, so bear with me on that. But Betsy ran the US Olympic trials about a month ago, a little bit over a month ago now. And in her eyes, that race was a pretty large failure for her. She changed to a US citizen last year. And one of her major goals for this year was to qualify for the Olympic Games for the US. So she obviously targeted trying to qualify for the US Olympic team at the Orlando Olympic trials at the start of February. And she dropped out in the later stages of the race and was very disappointed in what had happened that day, obviously, because that was what she had been training for and what she had set her sights on for many, many months. She bounced back very quickly from that disappointment to only 4 weeks later, run 2:19:17 at the Tokyo Marathon to be the third fastest recorded time by an American citizen. Obviously, Betsy is Kenyan born, but has spent a lot of her life in the US at college and after college as well. And I just find the fact that she was able to bounce back from such a significant failure to run such an awesome marathon at the Tokyo Marathon only a few weeks later to be something worth talking about. So in this conversation, we speak all about the mindset around failing at a marathon, backing up, and only a few weeks later running such a great result. Betsy was also doubted a lot by people around her that she'd be able to do that, and we speak to that as well. So this was a really interesting conversation to me. This podcast episode is sponsored by one of Sweat Elite's most valued brand partners, Precision Fuel and Hydration. I've been using Precision Fuel and Hydration products now for almost 2 years, the drink mix, the gels, the carb chews, and I believe that they are the best in the game. And why I think they're the best in the game is because I think that they're the most consistent for the most amount of runners. I speak to runners all the time. I coach almost 60 athletes. We have almost 100 athletes, I think a little bit more than 100 athletes now actually in the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy. And we talk about fueling, gels, drink mix, carb chews, or the equivalent of carb chews all the time. And I've noticed that people that use the Precision Fuel and Hydration products seem to have less issues in training and racing with GI distress. The taste also seems to be preferred by most people, and people just tend to stomach it very well. And when we talk about other brands, it doesn't tend to be quite the same. There tends to be a lot of brands that have, you know, people have a hard time with their stomachs and so on and so forth. And Precision Fuel and Hydration seem to be a risk-free way to go about fueling for your training and racing. So I strongly recommend Precision Fuel and Hydration supplements. I take them pretty much every day, depending on what training I've got going on. But you can score 15% off Precision Fuel and Hydration by using the code SWEATELITE-YT at checkout. Like YT is in for YouTube. So SWEATELITE and then a minus sign YT to score 15% off your order, Precision Fuel and Hydration. Thank you, Precision Fuel and Hydration, for being a part of Sweat Elites. That's enough for me in this intro. I hope that you enjoy this conversation with 2:19 marathoner Betsy Sainer. Betsy Sainer, welcome to the Sweat Elite podcast. I'm excited to speak to you because just recently you broke the 2:20 barrier for the first time. And it's funny speaking to me because I've been trying to break this barrier for many years. So let's talk about it. Congratulations, 2:19:17 at Tokyo Marathon, third fastest American ever. I mean, how do you feel?
You know, it's great. I know, like, to be honest, I've known you for a while now. And I used to follow you a lot when you keep posting about, like, I'm going to go, like, you know, all the time, especially when you went to Japan sometime and I saw you ran a marathon there or when you were in London and stuff, the goal has been like trying to break 2:20. I was like, oh, that could be, there's actually a day that you are doing a race. I'm going to, I was like, I should go with Matt because he's trying to break the 2:20. Because for me, to be honest, it's been a big thing to try to run sub 2:20. But sometimes you don't know what to do because, you know, like sometimes you are very ready and you feel like, okay, this time it's my time to go for it. And, you know, you hope everything will go well. But unfortunately, I think for me, I've tried. There's a day I was really fit And I was like, there's no way I would not break this. It was 2018 when I was in Frankfurt Marathon in the fall. And my coach, I was with Canova by that time. And he was like, you're doing really great. You're going to do it this time. So when I got to Frankfurt, I went out big time for it. So I think I remember I was in under 220 until 39K. And then all of a sudden, everything fell apart. And I just started like barely walking. I remember when Anna Kibrop, she came and passed me when I was like 41K. And she ended up running like 221 and I ran 223. So you can imagine like how big time I got blown out. So I remember I just went back and I was like, I don't know how it happened. And then I gave up on like trying to chase time. I gave up on trying to be like, let me break 220. So all the time I've been just approaching my races, especially before I went for maternity leave. I was like, you know what? I don't care. Let me just be competitive because I felt like I was keeping myself like too much pressure on it. But then to be honest, if someone could have asked me the time if I was going to go sub 220, if you could have asked me before the trials, I would definitely tell you yes because of the fitness that I had. I don't know if you ever met me when I was training here in Kenya. I had like the most hard working things I've ever done in my life. It was one of the hardest build-up I've done because everything was really very intense. Running something like 30K with like 325 average, which was like 142.2 something. And, you know, like getting this 35K, no big deal, 329 average. I knew like for sure, like I can be able to achieve the under 220, whatever. But anyway, for me, I was like, oh, let me just go. I'm going to make the team because I knew like I was super fit. But, you know, like you said, you have tried many times to try to break 220. And all the time you go there when you feel like you are very ready and then things go the other way around. So for me, I had one of the hardest heartbreak I've ever had in my life. You could imagine how it felt like going to the trials, knowing that no matter what happened, I knew like if I would not win the race, of course I will make the team. I was just assuming it's obvious because of the fitness that I had. But things happened really quick. When I was at the trials, I warmed up and I was feeling okay. But at some point I was like feeling overheated. I don't know. I think maybe because I stayed in the tent very much and I assumed the acclimatization session because I did a little bit of it, but I was not worried. I was like, oh, if I was able to win Sydney Marathon when it was eight and I didn't train for it, I was like, oh, my body's okay. Like, you know, I can do it, assuming things that it's going to go my way the way it went in Sydney. But unfortunately, it blew me really, really bad. And, you know, when I was in 20 mile, I was like, I don't think I can survive the next 6 miles. You know how it feels when you are like in your goals and then all of a sudden you feel like you are shattered. And when I was in 22 miles, I was like, there's no way I can go beyond here. My legs were not moving anymore. My breathing was completely out of it. Like I know myself the way I breathe all the time when I'm feeling comfortable and I know when I'm struggling. And sometimes I can get away with it. But to be honest, when I was in Orlando, I was not breathing even anymore. I was just like struggling and making this huge noise like, and now I was like, there's no way I can do this for the next 7 kilometers. So I made a decision for like, maybe 500 meters, I keep like, should I drop out? Because I was like, I'm trying, but I see like my body's done. And then in 22 miles, I just walked, you know, aside of the road and I lay on the grass. And one thing that came to my mind, I was like, oh my gosh, how did this even happen? You know, like I got very disappointed. There's one thing that came to my mind immediately. I was like, I don't know what happened, but maybe I will try again. But then I didn't tell anyone, of course, because they would be like, this is crazy. Like, why did you drop out if you know you want to try again? And then I just walk out of the course and, you know, you have to have like a few hours of disappointment and getting frustrated knowing that things has gone the wrong way. Because to make Olympic team, it's always 4 years. And I knew I have already lost it. I was like, so what am I going to do next? You know, that's what came to my mind. I was like, how am I going to come back from this disappointment? Because if I say, let me wait until the fall, to be honest with you, for marathon training, you always need motivation. Like, you know, you need something that you need to be happy when you're training for the marathon. Otherwise, it was going to be the hardest long fall coming for me. Because, you know, if you think about what you have done before, like, you know, if I think about like investing from, I started my build-up in October. If I still remember, I think it was October 20th. And I started now regretting saying like, you know, look at myself. I did this and this and it didn't work out. You know, you start counting how much hard work you put in. And now you sat down and you are like, I was like, oh, did this even happen? And then I went back to the hotel. My agent was like, let me know when you are ready to stop. And I left him until like 3, I think it was like 3:30. I walked out of my room and I was like, where are you? And he was like, you know, just come over to the swimming pool. And then I went and met him there. And I said, the first thing I said to him, we were not discussing about the lens, but he was like, what happened? And I was like, I don't even know how to explain. I think my hamstring. I actually had a little bit of hamstring, but the point when I dropped out, it was not the hamstring. But I started, as an athlete, you're trying to make something that can be justification as to why you did not do something. So I started saying, oh, hamstring. And then all of a sudden I said, I don't know, maybe the E. And I was like, I don't want to explain about the E thing, because I remember when he was trying to ask me like to do like acclimatization, and I told my agent, I'm good. I didn't get Sydney, so I think I can do this here too. So I didn't, we kind of stayed there, and then I was trying to eat for dinner and I was like, I'm feeling really upset. Like everything is just like not the way I want. So I keep, you know, flipping in the room until 4 a.m. in the morning. I woke up because I had a flight and I tested my agent, but he was asleep. And then I met one of our CEOs for Essex. His name is Ben Caesar, and we were actually traveling at the same time. So I met him at the lobby and I started crying because anyway, he's the big thing for us. He's the guy who deals with all the contracts and stuff. And he's one of the guys that has been really supportive to me since I joined Essex team, you know. He was the one who really, the reason why I'm there, I really give him a lot of credit, because I did not want to run anymore at some point in 2020. And then I just talked to him and I said, I want to run for you, because I was not with Nike anymore. Like my contract was stopped during COVID season. And he really surprised me, giving me like a good contract. And, you know, that's how I started coming back to running again after stopping for 2020. And so looking at him, you know, I had promised him that I'm going to make the team. So when I saw him, I started like, I had not seen him since I stopped out from the race, and I started crying. I was very disappointed. I was hitting my head and inside myself, I'm like, this is not okay. I told him like, can you handle me in Tokyo Marathon? And he looked at me and he's like, sure. And then he texted actually immediately, but he asked me like 2 questions. Are you sure? And I said, yes. You think you will recover from this? And I was like, yes. And then anyway, he was very supportive, because he actually accepted what I said, because I think, you know, the biggest thing, especially for coaches or anyone else, you have to trust you on the words from somebody who is doing it. You know, it's not the coach who is going to race anyway. It's going to be me. So, I'm so grateful, because he really gave me a chance, and he said, let me send a message. And then I took my flight. When I got to Tennessee, I was going to Tennessee for 2 days. When I was there, I'm like 50-50. I'm like, did I make a good decision or not? You know, so I keep it in my head. I'm like, I don't know, like, is this the right thing to do or not? Because I know in marathon, when you just hit the wall, even if you try to go for the next one, it's going to be another disappointment again. So I was like, let me try my best and see if possible to listen to my body, because I know how it feels when you stop and then you go to the next one and then you stop again. It's going to kill me completely. And thank goodness I took my flight back to Kenya on a Tuesday, and I arrived to Kenya on a Thursday, and I ran the 10K in the evening, like easy in the forest. And I was like, the legs are feeling okay and the breathing is feeling okay. I spoke with him on a Friday with my agent, and I was like, hey, I think I'm ready. I think I'm going only for my 10K. And I was like, I'm ready to go again. Like, really, it was not like anything special or something. And he was like, yeah, let me give you until Sunday. Let me know it goes when you do your first workout, which was on a Sunday, 1 week later, since the day I raced. And I woke up on Sunday morning and I was freaking out, because I was like, what will happen in this workout? Because, you know how it feels after, like, I ran 3:23 average until 35K. And now I'm here trying to test myself if I'm going to Tokyo or not. But I was so grateful. I ran in Kelu Road, like the hardest road, this Captain Dan Road. I know you know the road. And
I know.
I was, I did a very good test. My coach gave me to do 2Ks and 1K off. And he was like, I want you to run 3:20 or something. And I'm like, phew, in this course, it might not be possible. But we went out and we started with like 3:17. No big deal. Yeah, 3:17, 3:20, whatever. When it's too hilly, it's like 3:23. And I was like, what? I feel really, really good. So when I finished the 18K workout, I averaged 3:29 with the 1K in between. And I was like, oh, I'm ready to go. So I texted him immediately and I said, let's go for it. You know, let me trust my coach. We're going to put things together in 2 weeks and we'll see what happened. And actually, weirdly squeezing, I did only three workouts from that one. I went to the track and I did 1200 times 12. And I was really impressed. I was crossing the 1K with 309, 308. And then I did a 140K, which was 4 minute pace average in Kelu Road. And then I did my last workout, which was 1-2K and 25 400s. And I just felt really good. And I was like, okay, it's time to get to the plane. So when I was in the flight, I was like, okay, I don't want to post anything that I'm going to Tokyo, just in case of anything, you know. Because I was like, at the end of the day, people would not know that I was there because I did not post it that I was going to Tokyo, even though the start list was out. And I was like, people will assume that I did it before. So I went really quiet. I just got to Tokyo and I was still hesitant a little bit sometimes. So I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, it looks like I'm feeling my hamstring again. Or, you know, you start having like all these issues, whatever. I know you know how it feels when you're getting ready for a marathon and then you start feeling like, oh, maybe I have a back problem or something, like, because maybe you are too nervous or you don't know what to expect it because you are like, it's a long way. And for me, I just took that week just like enjoying Tokyo and relaxing because nobody was even expecting me to be competitive, to be honest, because I think I was number 11 when I started the race. And I started a new plan and I was like, okay, it's time to go. And I went out not having any goals, to be honest with you. My goal was like, I just want to finish this marathon. And all I wanted to do was just to try to run my personal best, which means anything under 2:21 will be really great. But it was not like sub 2:20 because I had no idea how I would feel, because I still had that mentality whereby you are like, I still have the trials, because it was only 1 month away since the day I raced. And thank goodness I just started the race. And my plan immediately when I saw Lorna, I was like, I didn't have any plans, but then when we started racing and I saw Lorna sitting at the back, I was like, let me sit in Lorna's and see what happened. Like, I will sit on Lorna and as much as I can until I'm done. So whenever Lorna makes any move, I was making the move. Whenever Lorna was doing anything, I was doing it. So anyway, she's one of the best girls I've ever met. To be honest with you, it's very rare to have someone who can take your back, because I remember at some point she was talking to me saying like, relax. And there's a point that I missed the fluids and she gave me, I knew what she was using. She was using Morton and she gave me Morton. I was like, okay, sure. Like, she really took care of me like more than a competitor. Like, she was like a sister to me, to be honest with you, because she took me all along until when we were in 27K, I knew she was not doing okay. And I just decided to go ahead and try to ask her to follow me. But unfortunately, she's having she had an injury. I was so disappointed because I felt like, if to be honest, for me to run 2:18, if Lorna was really, really, you know, like very healthy, I can tell you today I would be smiling with 2:18 because I was 17 seconds out of it. But from 27K, it started being really tough because I did not have anyone to specific, like the way I was sticking with Lorna and following Lorna. And I started running by myself. I could meet like one Japanese on the way and then they are falling apart. So it started being like, you are on your own from now until the finishing. But I wish Lorna well. But to be honest, like, she was my kismet for Tokyo. Like, she did really more than what a competitor could do to an athlete. She was very happy for me, even though she didn't finish the race, to be honest. But I still feel like I would have run 2:18 if she was going to run all the way to the finishing line.
This is the easiest interview I've ever done, Betsy, because you are one of the best storytellers that I've ever heard on the podcast. I mean, I had all these questions ready for you, but you've just answered them all in the last 15 minutes. So thanks for that. Fascinating story. I mean, you know, you've bridged the gap between the trials disappointment. People would already know, listening to the introduction that I would have done, you know, separately, that you changed citizenships to, you know, America. Many people would have already known this, but some might not. And you decided to run the US trials to try and make the team for the US. You went to college in the US. And I want to ask you a lot more about the training in the US compared to Kenya in a minute. But you bridged the gap between, basically in your eyes, failing at the trials, because your goal was to make the team, come top three, and you had a bad day. Why that happened, it sounds like you're not super sure. It might be something to do with the heat and not being ready for the heat. But if I've learned anything about marathon training and racing, and I'd like to hear what you think about this, Sometimes we just have bad days and we don't even really know why. It just happens. We don't really have, we try and come up with reasons, and some of the reasons might make sense. Like you said, the hamstring, it might've had something to do with that. But sometimes it just could be something that we just don't fully understand. But the thing that I find so awesome about this last month or two for you, months specifically, is that you had a failure and you bounced back so quickly and produced a personal best and a time that very few women have run since I'm 220. So it's a phenomenal result. And thanks for sharing sort of how you thought through that entire process of coming back from the trials, going to Kenya, getting back in, you know, back in the swing of training and then running 219. I have a few questions, but before I do ask questions about that, I would like to learn more from you, because very few people would be able to give a good answer to this, but you can, because you have experience living in the US and living in Kenya extensively both. How do you envision in your eyes the differences between how people in America prepare for a distance running event, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and in Kenya? And just whatever comes to your mind, I think would be good. Like, is it a psychological thing that's different? Are they more relaxed in Kenya? Are they doing more long running at a harder pace? Anything that comes to mind that you think would be interesting for people to learn? Because like I said, you've had exposure to both and very few people have had that.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, like I've met two teams when I was training in the US, when I ran the Beijing World Championship and the Olympics 2016. And to be honest with you, like, it's not a lot of difference. It's just like in Kenya, like, you know, you get a lot of people to run with. You know, training here is less, for me, especially for myself, I feel like it's less stressful because, you know, you can have as many pacemakers as you can. While in the US, sometimes, you know, if you are in a team, for example, when I was in BTC, Bowman's Track Club, it was a little bit okay, but it's still, you really need to make that movement, like saying, I'm going from Portland, Oregon to Flagstaff, Arizona. Sometimes we went to Colorado Springs. Sometimes we went to Utah. That for me, sometimes it's kind of like overwhelming, especially someone like a mom who, you know, for me, like I wouldn't want to travel with my son, you know, all over the place. But thank goodness, I respected the women in the US, to be honest with you, because, you know, to have a solid program, to have a solid build-up without having challenges is always too hard there. While in Kenya, you know, like, you have a lot of people. Like, in my house, for example, I have two people. I have one nanny who is taking care of my son, and then I have a lady who is helping us with cooking and everything. So when I'm here, the only thing that I'm worried about is, like, my training and my recovery. Like, I'm not straining to be like, I need to be in the kitchen, or, you know, like, I always have time with my son, but I always try to take a nap as much as I can, because anyway, it's doing well, because, you know, I've had a girl who has been with me for almost 2 years now, like, you know, babysitting my son until recently when I changed it. But in the US, I can imagine, like, you know, you have to take your child, especially to the daycare, you have to move from altitude to altitude. The training philosophy when you live in the US is completely different to Kenya, to be honest, because, you know, there's a lot of obstacles that you have to go through it. But the good news is a lot of people, like, you know, because you are born there and you are raised there, and all that you have known is like that kind of like a circle. While for myself, it was different a little bit, because I know how it feels being in Kenya and training in Kenya, because, you know, like, I was born, I was raised here until I was 18 when I moved to the US. And all the time when I speak with my parents, you know, my sisters-in-laws, they have kids, and it's always really easy because my mom is there, my nephew is there, my niece is there, everybody's there to support. While in the US, it's a little bit of a challenge because, you know, you have to figure out how to do balancing between training and, you know, and taking care of the house, whatever, like, you know, having your house, cooking and all the stuff. So that for me is a little bit different. But then in the US compared to Kenya as well, I have a philosophy whereby in the US, I remember I used to have to go to the gym all the time, you know, because you have to balance between the gym and the track and all this stuff. Well, when I'm training in Kenya, I don't know if it's true or not, but according to myself, because we're running in the hills, especially being in Iten, you know how hilly Iten is. Like, all the time, you have to go through like these hills every day, every morning, every evening. Even if I don't go to the gym, to be honest, which sometimes I do go to the gym and I would last for like, there's a day I would register and I'm like, I'm going to go to Dubai for the whole 2 months of build up, you know, I'm going to be going to the gym. I would pay the money and pay for the gym. And surprisingly, sometimes I will go twice in a month, you know, just because I don't know, like there's no consistency at all because I feel like the place a little bit different because in the US, if I will stay without going to the gym, sometimes I'm in the sea level. So you have to incorporate a lot of things to be able to be really good. Because I remember like when I was training for the track, I used to go to the gym twice a week. And in Kenya, there's a lot of people, and I know you know that, there's a lot of people who doesn't even have an idea how the gym is, but they'll still run great.
Most of the best Kenyan runners don't do any gym, which is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But I actually came and did my own mat, and I'm like, hey, maybe because they're training in altitude throughout the year, and then they run through the hills, and I feel like you get that stamina because of like, of course, when you're going, especially in Italy, when you go to that sort like in Tairimbili, and I know you've done that before. Remember, when you start that sort, like they start heal almost like a month. So I always feel like maybe you gain the strength because of going up in these hills all the time, plus because you are doing it like morning, evening, every day. And that's what, and then a lot of Kenyans have, if you have noticed, they like to go to the forest, right? And when you go to the forest, like today for myself, I was just doing, I'm starting to come back slowly, but I don't care. Like I'm just, I wake up and I'm like, I don't want to sleep. I want to go to the forest and run 5:30 pace for the whole 22 kilometers. So when you do that, it's like, it's not because you're running really slow, because you have no choice because of the hills. So I feel like you get the strength from like going those hills, like you know, compared to someone living in the sea level and you're training in kind of like a flat area because, if you go to Oregon is one of the flattest places I've ever trained. Like, there's no hill at all. Like, you know, I remember we used to run at the trail at the Nike, and it's like 1.6 miles or something, or more than that. But very much, it's just like flat. Like, you can even easily run like 3:10 pace, like without even noticing it. But in Kenya, if you try to do that in a 10, I don't know how long you're going to last. You know, sometimes you might have to suck it up and just be like, I'm running like 5 minute pace or like 4:30. And if you average like, for example, 4 minute pace for the whole run, that's like a whole out in a 10. While in the US, pretty much a lot of places are really flat. That's why you have to incorporate going to the gym and doing all these other basic things to be able to get better. But, you know, in Kenya, it's just different, to be honest.
Yeah, it definitely seems like that. And I can definitely agree with you that when you're training in Iten, it's the terrain is so difficult because there's very few flat areas. It's actually very difficult. Would you agree that it's very difficult to even find 200 meters of flat? It's pretty much non-existent. As a result of that, you're forced to just continuously be running up and down hills, which does make it a different training stimulus to if you're running always on the flat. So it's a huge difference. But one thing I think that's interesting is in Kenya, it's a lot harder to hit your goal marathon pace because of the hills and the altitude. Whereas if you're in Portland or you're somewhere in sea level in the US where you're used to, it's a lot easier. So for example, your goal pace now to try and run, say 2:17 is 3:15 per K. To do 3:15 per K or 5:12, I think per mile, 5:10, about that. To do that in Kenya is very different to doing that at sea level. And do you think that's important, or do you think that it doesn't really matter too much about, like, for example, in the long runs, if you're hitting the exact pace or if you're close to the pace, in your mind, does that really matter? Or like, how do you view the long specific marathon workouts when it comes to training in Kenya?
You know, like at least for people like myself who have ran like couple marathons, you know for sure like what you've done before, you know. It can be really a big challenge, especially for someone who is like a starter in the marathon, because if you would be like, okay, let me try to run like tweet a marathon pace in my training, especially long run. Let's say you're doing a 40K and you are like, my marathon pace, for example, might be 3:20 pace per K, which is 5:20, whatever. It can be really, really a big challenge, especially being here. But I think for me, to be honest, what I'm really excited about is like, since I, you know, after my maternity leave, training with Jocelyn, it's been one of the things that I observed very clearly. It's just like, I look at what we're doing. Like, you know, I remember very well what I did when I was running 2:22, and I remember very well what I was doing last year when I ran 2:21. So this year for sure, like I was way out of it, like, you know, way too far from what I used to do a long time ago. So I would use that and be like, whatever. I think, you know, coach could tell me like, I can see you running 2:17, you know, because you know, when I'm training with her, she's one of my riders, but I always take it. Like when I was following Lorna, I know like when I'm with, it's like when I'm with Jocelyn, when I see like when we started training long time ago, she used to be like 3 minutes when I came back from maternity leave, about 4 minutes, like when we finished like a long run or a workout. But then things started getting better for me because, you know, like when you come back from that maternity leave, you start getting fresh and you start having that strong body. And so things end up going down and down. All of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm 20 seconds behind her. And I know for sure, like she's that capacity of an athlete who can run 216 or 215. And that gave me a lot of hope. So I've had a target, like, you know, getting to train with people. Like, for example, if you train with Lorna Salpica, she's ran 217. So if they're on their best form and you know for sure that they're in their best personal best of what they can achieve, you can use, I use that for myself to catch myself saying, if I'm able to go with you for these all workouts, if I can be able to go through the whole circle of training with Jocelyn, for example, and she was able to go and run 64 and I'm really, really close in everything. I knew, like, I used that to catch myself saying, I think that I'm doing the right thing, because at the end of the day, in marathon, there's no shortcut. Like, you have to put the work in. If you are not fit, you are not fit. If you are not ready to get to that, you know, if you are not ready to go under 220 at that time, it might not happen when the body's not there yet. But when you have people like her, sometimes it's two-way. Things can go your way or things can go out of it, because maybe you might overdo it just because you're just having someone to chase. But for myself, I thank God because I've had, I know how to listen to my body very well. Sometimes I would go with that, and if I feel like I'm struggling, I don't really mind if I pull back and start going with my pacers, even if she can be like 40 seconds or 1 minute ahead of me, I would be okay with it, because I would be like, you know what, that felt really good, but I didn't want to keep pushing to, you know, to the point whereby I cannot be able to wake up the next day. So.
Yeah. Very interesting. I definitely agree with the fact that when you're in Kenya, or when anyone's in Kenya, they just have so many great athletes to benchmark themselves with. And you know, you're very open about the idea of training with other people and benchmarking them off, because there's very few women in the US that you could go and train with and decide, okay, you know, you've run 216, 217. Of course, the American record is 218. So that's something that's probably on your radar very soon. Another question I have for you, I listened to another podcast where you spoke about people doubting your ability to back up after the trials and run another good marathon. And you spoke to the fact that people were doubting you, and that was actually, I don't think you necessarily said it annoyed you, but of course that would probably bother anyone, that people are doubting them online. How did you process that, and how did you proved them wrong? I mean, you basically came out and said, I'm not going to listen to any of that doubt. I'm going to run a PB and run 219. But take me through the mental side of that doubt and then getting through it, because that's something that a lot of people face at the moment. They read things online about themselves. They read forums, they read articles, and they think, okay, well, maybe, you know, I don't want to read that. That's not what I believe in. How much did that bother you, I guess? And then how did you get over that to run so well in Tokyo?
I mean, to be honest with you, like, it's one of the, especially for myself, you know, this time after the trials, I've never felt disappointed, or, you know, like, you have your disappointment you're dealing with, especially, I know, you know, it feels, especially for you, I guess, when you feel like you can run 220 and then you go there and you start running something like 224, you know? So all you have to deal with, especially for your case, you'll be dealing with the disappointment of your race, but you don't have anyone else chatting you saying, you know, what happened or something like that, or saying like, that is overtraining. People start making their own observation. They start making their own conclusions without, you know, knowing what really happened. And I've noticed one thing, someone who has never ran a marathon, they, even though you will get even some people who have ran before, like, they start charging and say, they start talking. So for me, to be honest with you, it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with, because, unfortunately, in Kenya, it's very easy. Like, you remember the way when there's a rumor, even if it's true or not, in Kenya, it spreads like fire. Like, when someone says
it's a small place.
Yes, it's a small place. So I remember when I was in the US, I knew, of course, people were talking, like, starting saying, I think she's overtraining. They don't even know exactly what you have done, but I feel like maybe they did, because we have like 12 guys facing us. And I know someone might just say something like, oh, she's in shape. You know, you remember, you know, Kenya, how it is. Like, oh, she's in shape. Oh, she's not. So I finished my race and I was still dealing with my disappointments. And then on my way, when I was flying, I got two guys, you know, I would say like they're nice to me, whatever. But I guess they were just passing the information. So I spoke with that one of the guys and he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. So, but this guy was saying this and this. Oh my gosh, it just melted my heart. And then, you know, before I finished that, I'm getting another one again saying, oh, you know, I didn't want to talk to anyone, but I was traveling and I had a very long layover in Doha. And I talked to two guys. I was like, having fun, and I'm like chatting to two of my friends. I was like, oh, so and so say this and this. Yo, yeah, they were just discussing in training, saying like, I think maybe you have a train or something. You know, and then they start saying like, oh, she's done. I think she needs to quit the coaching and move to a different coach. And I'm like, it's only one race. Like, you know it feels. Like, it's just one race. You haven't heard, since I started coming back from maternity leave, I've been training with Just Lead from 2021, 2022, 2023. Year is 2024. It's only one race that didn't go well, to be honest, because since I train, everything has been coming along really well. And I'm really, really happy about the training. But now, here is like all those guys talking aside, charging what you did, saying like she was not supposed to do like this. Maybe she would have gone to the US 2 weeks before the trials. They start giving me an idea anyway that I was like, oh, maybe I could have done that, to be honest. But what is the point of doing that? So I was very stressed out, to be honest with you. Like, you know, sometimes we are all human being and, you know, even though you can decide to be like, I'm tough, like I can deal with such, you know, such people. But at some point when I was sleeping, I would be like, oh my gosh, why did this person say this? So what I did pretty much, I was like, I really need to overcome this. But I was praying and hoping that what will happen if I go to talk to you again and not be able to finish the race? So you start having that because, you know, there's a lot of people, like, not everybody is happy for you when you're doing well. And that really hurts a lot, especially for, you know, like, I know you might have seen what happened with Eliud, you know, like, when he's gone through a lot. I don't want him to be specific, but I know you might have seen sometimes the mean comments online.
No, and I actually haven't seen anything.
No, I mean, when, not for racing, actually, but when Kevin died and then people start chatting and you're saying like, why did Eliud not congratulate the guy, blah, 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 you know, such.
Yeah.
Yeah. So such comments, I feel like it's human, you know? And even though people would be like, oh, Eliud is the toughest guy, he can be able to handle any of those. Sometimes you are a human being and every human being, there's things that even if you try your best to be like, I'm really good with this, I can deal with it. For me, it just came to me and I was like, really, like, this is really, I'm okay with it. People can speak whatever. I started calling people out. Like, I remember calling two guys. I was like, I sent a message. I was like, hey, I'm sorry, but whatever you're doing is not right. I was like, I have to be specific, like, you know, saying what they said and stuff. And for me, when I did that, I think I won, to be honest with you, because I was like, yes, I was trying to call them. I tried to call one of them. He did not pick the phone. And I know I sent a message and I was like, are you ready to talk? I want you to talk to me because I don't like when you talk really negative about me. And when they don't respond, and then I leave a message, and then I feel like I've won because at least I've shown them that I can stand for myself, because I was like, hey, bring it on. Like, just tell me what you want from me. You know, I start helping kind of, but the good news is nobody picked the phone. They didn't answer my message, except one of them was like, you're my sister. Please, let's stop when we meet in Kenya. And I was like, yes, I won it now, because I said, it felt humiliated. So, and the other one, in other words, end up speaking with one of my friend, one of my coaches. And he was like, oh, tell me, it's like, I didn't mean la, 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 blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yes, this one, I won. So when I did that, I just felt really good with it, to be honest with you. But if I did not, because sometimes when I have something that is bothering me and if I don't speak it out, it takes forever to get away from myself. But nowadays I've learned that for me, if I know like Matt, do this and this, I'll just call you, be like, hey, how are you doing? I just wanted us to speak about this and this. And then as soon as I finish talking with you, I forgive you and I move on. Like, I will not have anything to carry in my heart. But that was very hard to swallow. But I was like, okay, I've forgiven them. But now I'm pretty sure they were looking and waiting for me again in Tokyo. Because there's a page in Facebook. It's called Pulse Rate. Something like that, Ball Sports, something. I don't know if you have seen that. It's a page it's kind of like a page that they're posting about sports and stuff. And when they announced that I was running Tokyo, one the guy in me was really nice. He just posted like saying like, oh, let's, I hope Betsy will be able to bounce back. I see like she's been added to the, you know, Tokyo Marathon start list or whatever. And then this guy, I would call him an idiot, just coming and making a huge compliment saying like, oh, that's bullshit. Why is she going to Tokyo? She's going to run, she's going to blow out really bad and run 2:30. If she was not able to make the team at the, you know, underestimating the potential of the US women field, saying like, if she was not able to make the team in the US, oh, she cannot even be able to compete with the Kenyans and whatever. I read the message and I was like, should I go to his inbox? It was like, since I don't know this person and the base look really weird, I was like, you know what? Whatever. I'm just going to let that go. So,
Sydney,
you know, that's how I ended up winning that. I was like, let me go because I know there's a lot of people, you know, like, have you seen when you're trying to do something and there's a lot of negative things going on there? Yeah. That you
well,
know,
the negativity is normally people that want to do what you're trying to do, but can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I did that like that. I was like, you know what? I would look at the pages of the people talking and I'm like, this guy doesn't even know how the plane looks like. You know, he's just like talking and, you know, like, I call them losers, to be honest, because anybody who knows marathon, you can be in the best shape of your life, like Sivan. Sivan was actually really fit when you were in Tokyo. That's what she said. But then things happened, like, you know, like she... Everything, you know, the plans she had didn't work out. You know, she was not doing a great job of like grabbing the fluids. And I think in 25K, when people made the move, she stopped and you know, she stood and stopped and just got the fluids. But people were moving, like she was not good in like handling that fluid. But then by that time, the strategy and everything fade away. Should we judge Sivana San saying she's done because she ran 218? No. But then some people doesn't get it. They will just use that and say, oh, she's done. She ran 218. Yes, she ran 218. It's not her best race. But for anyone who understands marathon, it's like things can happen really quickly. Like you say, sometimes you can be really, really fit. You wake up in the morning and it's not your day. You just, things doesn't just like to go your way. And it's always acceptable. Like, you know, we just have to know how to bounce back and, you know, like how to just like get back on it and, you know, like just prove yourself again, saying like, I want to do this again, you know, than just getting disappointed. But if we get to the point whereby we're judging people and using, because when I saw that comment, like underestimating, especially the US women and saying, if she was not able to make the team in the US, why is she even trying again to run? You know, if you look at it, like in the other Olympics in Tokyo, whatever, where was the past Olympics? And we had Molly Seidel being third. So you see like Emily Sisson as 218, Kayra as 219. So I feel like you cannot underestimate such field and say like, oh, there's nobody in that team, you know? It's still like a solid, like, you know, like it might not be, we might not like have like 100 people like Kenya, the way they have a lot of people running 218, 222, whatever. But still, you can look at the numbers. People are coming really along really well. But a lot of people will always be there to say something, you know, like, you know, walking around sometimes, oh, you're running for the US, it's so easy. I'm like, no, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's so true. Well, Betsy, yeah. I really have enjoyed this conversation. In fact, I will say that this has been one of the most enjoyable conversations I've had on the podcast for a while because you're able to articulate and tell stories so well. So I think that's a really great skill to have for an athlete because we as fans of the sport, we get motivated by stories and watching people do things that are inspiring. And I just want to say personally on the record that watching you go through a failure at the trials and turn around and run sub 220 made me very inspired. So congratulations for doing that. And I'm excited to see what you do in the second half of the year. I know the Olympics aren't going to happen for you, but it sounds like you're going to do another major or maybe another big race in the second half of the year. Is that what you currently are thinking?
Yeah, you know, like I said, Matt, like when you don't make the team, all you have to do is to be supportive to the rest of the team because, you know, they were good on that day and they have been everybody as their best today. So for me, it's just like, I had to turn over and be like, what should I do next? So I finished Tokyo and now it's like, what should Betsy do for the rest of the year? Because Olympics is already gone, but I'm really happy and excited for the girls that we select that. So I'm looking forward to the fall, to be honest with you. Like I'm trying to take care of my body as much as I can, but I'll try to jump into like some short races like 10K, half, and then try to get another good marathon in the fall, and I don't know where yet, but for sure, like I'm getting ready for another full marathon this year. And you know, the year will be great when you just accomplish, you know, your goals, especially when the other one falls, you wake up and get ready to the next one.
For sure. The last question I have for you before we finish off, what is your current ASICS shoe rotation? What are your favorite shoes? What do you wear when you go easy, when you go long, when you do hard workouts? What are your favorite shoes?
My favorite shoes for training is Nova Blast. I like to use Gel Nimba sometimes, but every time when I know like I'm going long or something, I like the Nova Blast a lot because it's kind of like, sometimes I call them like prototype kind of training shoes, because I don't know if you have ever tried the Nova Blast with a big, it has a very good cushioning. And
I have. I really like the Nova Blast. It's a very soft and very, very supportive shoe. It's really good.
Yeah. And then for the racing flats, I like to use, Metaspeed Edge because of my running style. Like I very much believe people who are running the, if you're running through using your heels, you know, for me, I don't run with the toes. I feel like the Nova Blast, I feel like the Metaspeed Edge is really my kind of type because I'm not using that also.
Gotcha. Well, Betsy, thank you so much for joining the Sweaterly podcast, sharing all the insights. Keep doing what you're doing. I think the American record might be yours, maybe this year. We'll see. Hopefully we touch base with you again at the end of the year. But huge congratulations on sub 220 in Tokyo. And I look forward to seeing what you get up to next.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. Have a good day. Thank you.